Hello, this is Hear Her Sports, the podcast for everyone who loves stories by and about female athletes and other women in sport. I am your host, Elizabeth Emery. My guest today is Kendra Coleman. She is a professional USA track and field athlete. She was on the 2017 World Championship 4x800 team. She's an 8-time All-American at UT Austin and was a high school state champion in the 400 meters. In the episode, Kendra shares her story of placing 9th at the 2016 Olympic Trials. She is proud of that race and is ready to give everything on the line this summer at the Track and Field Olympic Trials in Eugene, Oregon. It's always fun to get to know athletes before big competitions and then follow along with their progress. The trials are on June 21st to June 30th. Kendra is targeting the 800, where, as you will hear, she wants to run sub 2 minutes, which would be a personal best for her. Kendra is also a TV producer and the director of athlete services at USA Track and Field. Kendra and I talk about everything she's involved with, what her training looks like in spectacular and really fun detail, visualizing big races, being competitive and friendly with her adversaries, the beauty of women coaches, her full support team, and racing happy. Like so many women in sport, Kendra has a great desire to help young athletes coming up behind her. She'll be a really wonderful coach herself and eventually a wonderful athletic director, both of which she said she would like to do post-Olympics. I'm so excited about everything Kendra and I talk about, so let's get rolling and meet Kendra Coleman. Please enjoy the show. Well, hello and welcome to Hear Her Sports podcast, Kendra. It is really an honor to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Well, great. And can you just get us started and warmed up by telling us what you're up to right now? I have a feeling you're involved in a lot of things.
I am. I am a very busy woman. But sure, I can start with track and field. So I am entering one of my last seasons as a professional athlete. I've been running since I was a child, but running professionally since 2015. And so, yeah, it's been a great run and going into one of my last Olympic trials this June. So everything that I'm doing now is geared towards the Olympic trials starting June 21st in Eugene, Oregon. And I've been doing really hard workouts, a lot of lifting, a lot of pull, a lot of cross training, just the works of trying to get in shape in time to make a team. So those have been my goals. I have been, you know, eating well, doing all the things I can do to make sure that my body is ready to start, you know, getting into some outdoor meets this month. So I'm excited about that. And yeah, I actually also work part-time at the University of Texas at Austin. And our events just finished and wrapped up at South by Southwest. I'm a part of a team that works on educational grants and a TV show, kind of like TED Talk, but for Black academics in the Black and colored communities. So really excited about those projects that just wrapped. Now I can focus on track. And then finally, I also work as the Director of Athlete Services at USA Track and Field through the Athletes Commission. So basically, we are a group of athletes, both current athletes and retired athletes, that advocate for our general athlete body. So if someone, you know, didn't get their prize money, if someone's having trouble getting to nationals, if someone needs help with their agent or maybe a part-time job, our group, our committee works on serving athletes, and we are the liaison between them and our national governing body.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And I sleep, I guess, sometimes.
Occasionally, yeah. Tell me more about the committee. How did you get on that committee?
Yeah. When I joined, it was actually called AAC, which is the Athletes Advisory Committee. And I like that word advisory. So basically, we are elected by our peers, by our athlete body. And yeah, we tend to, you know, go to the annual meeting. That's one of the givens. And that happens every year in December for USA Track and Field. And we kind of assemble with a group of five of us. And that officer group is what we call them, officers. So I'm one of the officers. We work on hard issues. So issues, and athletes complain, hey, I didn't like that social media. They didn't include me. Or, hey, I think we should be earning more than $6,000 as first prize at USA's. Or, hey, my agent has not paid me my prize money since 8 months ago. We take on everything you could think of that athletes need in our sport. A lot of them are high achieving athletes, some of them Olympic medalists, and some of them are not. Some of them are just trying to make it day by day and thinking about going pro and thinking about entering our national championship. So we deal with the whole spectrum. So that makes our job difficult, but definitely worthwhile. I particularly enjoy my position, athlete service, because I get to provide athletes who are maybe looking to transition out of sport. So they're looking to have a full-time job next year. And what does that look like? And how should they get started? Their resume has just been running. So how do we help them, fill it up and maybe connect them with the right person? So that's one of my passions. And then also just providing them other services, like mental health. Maybe, we had some athletes pass away and some of our athletes felt like our governing body didn't have the correct resources for them. So I was able to provide a couple of programs and set that up for our athletes. So it's just stuff like that. It's what's the demand and how can we supply? So I love being in that committee. This is also my last year in that committee. We serve a 4-year term. So I started in 2020 and I'll end this December.
I bet that's given you like this incredibly broad perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as an athlete, I thought I kind of had it figured out. But, ever since I've been in this position, it's opened my eyes to the real needs of our sport. And unfortunately, because we are a supply demand kind of thing, I've seen a lot of the gaps that we have as a national governing body and maybe what USA Track and Field could do better. So I'm really happy to be involved in closing those gaps and making it better for athletes and in, just closing that gap too between our national office and the athletes and how can we come together and solve the problems that we have.
Does the USA Track and Field have something in place that helps the transition out of professional sport into the next phase working? Or whatever it might be.
Yeah. So they are working with a program called the Bell Lab. That's one of their main programs. And then, of course, they have me. So I'm kind of like the subcommittee of that. So I work directly with the athletes. But the Bell Lab program is great. It takes the small cohort every year and it connects them with professionals in their desired field. And they're able to, shadow them. They're able to use them as far as networking and as far as connecting them with other professionals or other institutions or, other companies that are related to what they want to do. So yeah, they're working on it. I think for a long time, USA Track and Field has been geared on doing a couple of things really well. And now that they've succeeded and now that they've started to branch out in holding track meets and other things, they're trying to see how we can fill the gaps and figure out other ways to serve the athlete.
I assume you're working with both the male and female athletes. Have you seen anything in particular from your female athletes, like what they're missing and what they're wanting or asking for?
Yeah, that's a great question. I tend to see our female athletes typically, it's hard for them because, again, as women, it's like we have this self-imposed timeline or maybe it's a social construct that we give ourselves. And so a lot of times it's hard to keep young athletes who don't have resources in the sport. And so I constantly get messages from athletes who are looking for support. So they ask, hey, does USA Track and Field have grants? And I tell them, unfortunately, they don't. But here are some other programs that you can apply for. Here are some other things you can do to go that route, because not everyone gets, a six-figure contract out of college. I mean, there's very few who do. And they deserve it, and not talking bad about them, but not everyone does. So for those athletes who are what we like to call developmental, we try to provide at least connections, even if it's me giving them links to the Women's Sports Foundation or giving them links to the USA Track and Field Foundation to apply for those grants. Some of those foundations, they have grants geared towards females who may have just given birth or thinking about getting pregnant. They have grants for developing athletes right out of college, which are great. The Women's Sports Foundation has grants for travel that you can use for equipment. So there's tons of opportunities. But as far as our national governing body, it's really hard to find those things that cater towards the female athlete, right? So we've been looking for ways, and I've been working particularly with the national office to think of other options. I believe last year, USA Track and Field was the first time, I think maybe 2 years ago now, when Allison Felix decided to come back to the sport after pregnancy, they provided daycare now at all of our national championships. So that was a really great step in the right direction. But I think, again, we're missing a lot. So it's just about voicing what we need, voicing what I'm getting from the female athletes, and just really making sure that each year gets better for the female athlete.
That's great. And I love that you're there, you know, doing that work. It's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, back to what you're working on. What are your goals at the trials? And what are you working specifically towards?
Absolutely. I will always say my goal at the trials, when I step on that line, I fully intend to make the team every time. So yeah, I think, you know, obviously that's like the big overarching goal. For me, I think at the trials, because of the, you know, previous years I've had and the injuries I've endured and stuff like that, I will be proud of myself. I think I have a time in my mind. I think anything under 2 flat, which is my personal best, I would be very, very happy with. When you run a personal record or personal best, it's like, oh, what more could you ask for, right? So even if I don't make the team and I still run a personal best, that means I gave it my best on that day. So I would love to run under 2 minutes at the trials. And then, of course, I would really just like to improve in the round. So we typically have 3 rounds at the Olympic trials. So it's like a prelim, a semifinal, and a final. And so my goal is to just, you know, take it easy the first couple of rounds and then really be able to pack a punch in the final round. So those are my 3 goals, is just, you know, taking it day by day and then setting a goal each day. And then, of course, having my time goal of running under 2 minutes.
When I asked you what you were doing, you were talking about all of your training that are going to get you to the trials. Like, what actually does your week look like, particularly since you're doing all this other stuff that you talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, Monday through Monday. Yeah, that's how I think about it. But sure. So Monday is typically like a quality session. And I'm starting off with Monday because that's the way my brain works. I do understand that the week starts on Sunday, but maybe that's just my training. So, but Monday's typically a quality session. We do like probably like a mid-morning to afternoon workout on the track. So that could look like 300s. It could look like 1,000, an 800, a 400. It could look like mile repeats or anything from 150s. So I'm a middle distance athlete. So I cover the distances and I do some sprinting. So I kind of do it all. And then about 2 hours later, I'll have like a protein shake in between. But 2 hours later, I'll go to my weightlifting session. And so my weightlifting session will, you know, consist of overhead snatches, a lot of Olympic lifts, maybe some cleans, some body work. Because I'm a middle distance athlete, I don't want to, you know, get too shredded. That's too much weight to carry around for 2 laps. So I keep it light. I used a lot of body weight stuff or 10 pounds to do abs, core, stabilization, balance, all of those things. And then we get to like the evening where I will either do a lot of treatment or maybe like a pool run or like what we call a second run, but I'll do cross training for that. So I'll do pool or bike and then do a little bit of treatment. Tuesday will be a lighter day, so I will probably go on a 3 to 5 mile run, anywhere in between there. And I usually keep my heart rate pretty low. That's how I kind of measure if it's easy or hard. And if I need to stop, I stop, which is pretty cool. My coach is more concerned with my heart rate and how I'm recovering than how much ground I cover and the speed I'm going. And then after that, again, in the evening, I'll do a second run. So it'll be like a nice bike ride or maybe even going for a walk with the dog. And then typically I might have a meeting in between those 2 days. I usually take my meetings in the evening. So if I need to, get in touch with one of the officers for our AC or Athletes Commission meeting, we usually do it in the evening. So that's nice. After I cook dinner and, you know, head to bed, I'll hop on a call before I head to bed. I'll hop on a call and we'll take care of business. And then Wednesday is either a light day, which is like a recovery day, or it could be another quality session. But usually this is treatment day. So I like to get like a massage. I'll get some needling. I will get some cupping, ice bath, which is great time. It's super cold. And then, it'll be a really easy day. I might do like a bike that day or a light jog. And then Thursday, we'll come back to the track. We'll hit it hard, quality session. I'll be on the ground dying, but it'll be, you know, anything from 600s again to 200 repeats, something a little quicker probably. And then again, another weightlifting session in the evening. And then Friday, it'll be probably a nice long run. So I'll go anywhere between 4 to 6 miles this time, a little longer than Tuesday. And yeah, then I'll take a little break. I'll have lunch, you know, do some work on the computer for my job at the University of Texas. I usually have my meetings on Friday for that. So I leave some time open in the afternoon and then do a little nice second run. So a swim, a bike, or even a walk in the evening. And then Saturday, we'll have another session on the track. And this session is usually my speed day. So I like this day. I'm a sprinter at heart. I run the 800, but I'm a sprinter at heart. So Saturdays is like, let's get in the blocks. Let's, you know, act like we're sprinters. We're going to pretend like we're running the 400 and do some block starts, some fast stuff. We'll do some sled pulls, some sled towing, some sled drills. We'll do fast sprint drills. We'll run some 80s and 100s and something real fast. So I like those days. And then Sunday, I get to rest, which is awesome. Love Sundays. And I like to usually cook on Sundays. I'm a big fan of cooking. I'm a big foodie. So I love to cook, kind of meal prep for the week, just read a book, you know, have some downtime, catch up on emails. And that's my week.
Wow. That was the best description of a week I've had, I think, ever.
That's really?
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, awesome. Okay. I'm glad to hear.
So, like, I'm not exactly sure how to ask this question because, you know, it's sort of an all-encompassing in just, like how are you feeling about your prep for the trials? And, you know, the thing about the trials, A, it's one day, but B, there's so much tension, you know, because it's one day and it, you know, like, it has all this significance and that can get overblown. I don't know. I'm curious how you're thinking about all of that.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. My first Olympic trials, I was so nervous. I would agree with you. Olympic trials has a totally different feeling than just the national championship that happens every other 3 years. The Olympic trials is something different. The pressure, you can smell it in the air and it's literally like just fills your lungs as you're getting ready to run. So that can be nerve-wracking. And unfortunately, honestly, it's to my benefit because I have seen people choke in that and it's real. It's a thing. It can happen. I love to call on my experience. I have been there. I have done that. I have done well there before and I have done bad there before. So I don't let that dictate my emotional state. I have a great sports psychiatrist that I work with. And we practice visualization. So I've already been to the trials a few times this year. And so what we do is we sit down and she, you know, has a great big journal for me that I use, a performance journal. And we smell the grass. I think about what people I might see. I think about what smells, other smells I might smell. I think about what the track feels like. I think about who I might see in the stands. I think about the sweat on my neck. I mean, I'm there. My body thinks I'm there. And that type of visualization prepares me for when I actually do get there. And yeah, I mean, for me, I'm blessed to have the experience that I do. And I try to use it over my opponent. So I have traveled all over the world. I have had 3 hours off of an 8-hour plane ride and had to get on the line. I've been to Italy, I've been to London, I've been to Budapest, I've been to the smallest little meet you could think of in Switzerland and in Ireland. So My experience has given me the boost of confidence that I need. And as I prepare, right, I prepare physically, I prepare mentally, and I prepare spiritually as well. I always call on my experience. And I also think about, okay, how do I feel in comparison to other years? Like, where am I at fitness wise? And my coach and I have been working together off and on since 2015. So with her, she has all of my PRs. So we know what kind of shape I'm in. Obviously, by June, if I'm not in under 2 flat shape, we will know. And she will be realistic with me and say, look, you're not in that shape. Let's see how it goes. Or if I am in that shape, she's going to look at me and say, this is your time to make the team. And she's going to be realistic with me. So I think, again, having the overarching theme, and obviously I want to go to Paris, right? But I think as an athlete, one, you have to be realistic. Two, you have to be mentally prepared. And three, anything can happen in a race. So as long as you hold those three and all of them at the forefront of your mind when you step on the line at the trials, I truly think anything can happen. I recall in 2016 when I was 9th at the trials and I missed the final by 0.07 of a second. Yes, someone literally edged me with her shoulder. Maybe if I had like a bigger bust size, I would have won that day. Literally that close. They had to like call it back. We were waiting for the results and we did not see it on the screen. That's how close it was. They needed time to separate us. So obviously devastated, but happy. I was a rookie. That's when I started, you know, first started my career in 2016, and I had nothing. I had no sponsor. I was wearing an all black uniform because that's all I could afford. I was Ubering and substitute teaching. So that for me was a win, and that elevated my career ever since. But the main takeaway that I took away from that was in that final, everyone thought that was going to make the team fell at the last 200 on the curve. And there were a couple of people who made the team that were not predicted to make the team because the other girls were behind them on the floor. So, like I said, anything can happen. Anything can happen. Track and field is unpredictable. And like you said, it's on that one day. So if there's an American record holder running really well all year, for some reason she trips on the day of making the Olympic team or at the Olympic trials, then I have to be ready to take advantage of any opportunity that I get. So just because track is such an unpredictable sport, I prepare myself for the unpredictable. And the more you prepare for that, the better athlete you are of making that one day really special for yourself.
Do you get nervous on the line? I mean, is that part of what you're visualizing, is sort of those emotions that are going to be happening?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Nerves are always going to be there. I mean, you get nervous like the night before, like your stomach just sinks. Like by the time I get to the line, my nerves are there, present. I mean, I'm nervous. I think for me, the thing about nerves is like you can use them to your advantage. So I try to like rein them in, kind of like trying to calm a horse, like bring it in, like you can be nervous, but let's use this somewhere in the race. So if there's like a move, or if there's like a jolt, you know, or there's a change in the leader, like use those nerves to be bold, to make a move, to initiate maybe the move. So I try my best to use my nerves to my advantage.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I sure hope you're enjoying today's episode with Kendra Coleman. If you are, please consider supporting the show with a cup of wonderful coffee. All of the support I receive from listeners through the Buy Me a Coffee platform and the Hear Her Sports Bookshop page go directly to editing and producing this podcast, which means your support increases the amount of media coverage for female athletes and women in sport. Kendra is currently reading Michelle Obama's The Light We Carry and just finished Obama's Becoming. You can find those two books on our bookshop page, and once you are there, whatever you order supports Hear Her Sports. Go to hearhersports.com/books. Sports media coverage for women is on the rise, but primarily from small enterprises like this very podcast. We absolutely can use your help to keep us strong, growing, and well-fueled. Every donation is very much appreciated, go to buymeacoffee.com/hearher or to the support tab on hearhersports.com. Also find there a menu tab for our bookshop page. Thank you so much.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!
Now, let's get back to Kendra Coleman and hear about the wonderful people around her who boost her up and support her in all sorts of ways. Something I've been thinking about a lot lately is, you know, who helps us to get to where we want to go and what kind of support that person is able to offer and knows how to offer. And you've already mentioned your coach and your sports psych. Like, who are your people and what are they doing very specifically to, like, really support you?
Wow. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that it takes a village. This is not something that I envisioned myself doing when I was eighth grade middle school track. So the groups of people that have helped me become who I am today, I mean, the amount of lengths they've gone to has just been incredible. So thank you to all of them first. My coach definitely is the first person who comes to mind, obviously, because we communicate every day about workouts. I don't like to think of it because I'm a professional. You have to remember, track and field professionals, we technically hire our team, right? So everyone kind of works for us because we pay them. That's the unique part of it, is having a coach that I absolutely admire. Rose Monday is my coach, and she was a professional runner herself. So she's been there, done that, been on the circuit, made USA teams, all of the things. And she was the 2020 Olympic coach, which was awesome. 2021, after the pandemic, 2021 Olympic coach. And so, yeah, she understands what I need. And most importantly, it's not a dictatorship with her. It's a partnership. So if I tell her, hey, you know, I get what you're trying to do with this workout, but what do you think about this? She'll consider it. She'll say, okay, I know you have experience. I know I trust you and you trust your body. And how about this? So we kind of always work together to create, it's like a recipe, right? Like a perfect recipe of workouts. But she's kind of like a mom to me. And sometimes she's kind of like a best friend to me. And sometimes she's like a sister. And sometimes she's like a really strict teacher. So all of those things kind of mix together to make my coach, which is awesome because the coach is supposed to hold you accountable. And so she does a great job of doing that without being overbearing. And she's a woman, and I love being coached by a woman. I've always had my greatest successes with female coaches. They know how to speak to the female. They know how to speak their language. They know what they need, and they know when they need to back off. She obviously knows if I'm having issues with my husband or if I've just had a long day from, you know, doing the dishes, maintaining the household. She gets it, you know, so it's just awesome to be able to have somebody like that. My sports psychiatrist is Julie Warnick out of San Antonio. She's awesome. I've been working with her since 2015 as well, kind of off and on as we go. And she always sends me, you know, different techniques to do. She just sent me her journal actually last month that she produced. It's called Getting Gritty. And that is absolutely amazing. It kind of goes through just every reflection aspect of the game you could think of. She has three main boxes, like mental, technical, strategic, and what could I do better? She's taught me the most important lesson that I've took throughout my whole career was after a race, don't write down and write the positive and the negative, or think about the positive and the negative. Like that's a terrible way to break down what you've just done. So what we've done now is think about the positive and what we can do better next time. So just that little like switch in my mind, there's nothing negative that I did that day because I still finished the race. I think there were things I could do better, right? So I think changing that perspective has totally just altered the way I view track and field as an athlete and as someone who just loves the sport. And then of course, last but definitely not least, are my family and my husband. So my family has been such a crucial part of my success. My mother literally took out her retirement to move to Austin, Texas to propel my professional career. When I went pro, I was not like the huge Olympic stars. I did not have a contract. And I told her, you know what? I think I can do this. And just based off of that, she believed in me. She believed that I would be running on Team USA. She believed I could make an Olympic team as much as I did. And I didn't have any money. So she gave me 2 years. She said, if you don't have, you know, some type of sponsorship or any income from track and field, I love you, but I don't love you that much. But no. No. She is just like, that means God is trying to tell you it's time to move on. So she gave me 2 years. And by that time, she was with me at the Olympic trials in 2016. So by that time, I was ninth at the Olympic trials and I couldn't have been happier. And I was ready to make this a living for myself. So yeah, I think it's just awesome that she was able to just support me the way she does. And she still does now. And my husband as well. We've actually been together since college in 2012. And so he's seen me at University of Texas throwing up Longhorns at Texas Relays and going to Big 12 championships and the NCAA championships in Oregon. He's been at all of that. So to see me grow, you know, and our relationship grow from him being my little boyfriend to now my husband, and he's been to all the Olympic trials with me as well, supporting me, driving around my mom and my family, making sure I have everything I need. And more importantly, I think it's so important that a lot of people don't get. As female athletes, a lot of men are very intimidated by you. So let's just start there. But he has been so amazingly supportive. And by that, it's like the little things. It's like the male tension that he receives when his friends ask him, oh, Kendra's out of town again? Yes, she's pursuing an Olympic dream. Oh, my bad, bro. I didn't mean it like that. You know, and it's so awesome to have a husband that is like, defends you, understands your goals that may not be typical. I don't think any of his friends or my friends know any other person training for the Olympics. So it's a very strong narrative that has to be presented time and time again to his family as well as our circles of networks who don't quite understand my hectic schedule and the fact that I can't go out or the fact that I can't attend every wedding or every birthday. He's just been amazing. He's my number one advocate for supporting the dream I'm going after.
Well, that's a great team. Wow.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, that husband who's willing to stand up for you is super important.
It is.
And to understand what you're doing. I think that's great.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. It is because it makes a difference because that gets exhausting. Like, I think even as a Black female athlete, I think it just gets exhausting. Like, okay, yes, I'm an athlete. Yes, it's me actually that I'm the athlete. And yes, I am trying to go to the Olympics. That carrying that is heavy sometimes. So it's nice to have someone to share that load with.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned preferring to have a women coach because I too prefer having a women coach. And, you know, like, it's hard to explain why. I don't even know if I could put it into words, but I very definitely prefer it.
Yeah, right. And I didn't think that. And of course, I've been coached by men, and that's been perfectly fine as well. But I would say so the same myself. Like, I prefer the female athlete because it's just like this otherworldly connection that we end up having.
Sure.
Like my high school coach. So I won the state championship in Texas in high school. And Coach Kim Gomez, she coached me since I was, you know, a freshman. And I didn't really have any interest in track at that time. And she was able to slowly convince me, like, hey, you have a gift. And she was the first one that really could speak my language for me to understand what my gift was. And so, yeah, I thought it was just so important. And again, she was like kind of like a second mom to me, just someone I could tell things with. It's kind of like having that openness makes you want to do well for them. And I almost wanted to do well for, like, so much for her, not only for myself, but for her, because I saw all of the hard work that she did.
You're so lucky you had a female coach in high school. That's amazing. Wow.
It is. It's very rare. Yes. Yeah. Very lucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you competitive?
Oh, absolutely. Probably to like an unhealthy point sometimes. But yes. Yes, I am. Very competitive. Always have been. I grew up racing my little cousins, and I grew up with a bunch of boys. So about three boys, cousins. And I would race them in the backyard. And I'd be like, give me your lunch money. Because I beat you again, and I'm shocked that you still want to race me week after week. So yeah, I was always, you know, surrounded by boys growing up. I have a sister who's 6 years older than me, but I have a ton of boy cousins. So my age, actually. So I was always just, okay, if we were playing Scrabble, if we were playing Monopoly, it didn't matter. If we were running to the gas station, whatever. It was always a competition. So when I joined sports, I first did soccer before track. And yeah, I love the competitive edge and the grittiness of soccer, because just like put your elbows out if you need to, kick the ball. And it's a little bit more, obviously a lot more contact than track and field. So I was able to get that out as well. And then growing up, surprisingly, I did a lot of wrestling camps.
What?
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. So
how did that
all of
happen?
The boys, all of the boys in my family were wrestlers. Oh. So they or played football. So they would have like wrestling camps, and they'd be like, hey, we need more kids. So there goes the whole family. And they'd be like, do you accept girls? And they'd be like, yeah. So I learned how to wrestle when I was little, and did a ton of camps. And it was not my favorite thing, particularly because it messed up my hair. That's not was not fun for me. But yeah, I like keeping my hair cute. So I was like, not my sport, but awesome sport, and just fueled the competitive nature in me.
Sure.
So yeah, I've always been. I'm in a sports family, so I've always been competitive.
And what does that look like now on the field, with your teammates, with your people that are lining up with you? Like, what does competition and aggression look like?
Yeah, that's great. Being an individual sport is a little different. And I think I have internalized a lot of that towards myself, which, again, we keep a healthy balance. But what I mean is, I have to be aggressive within, and I have to be competitive within. So I can give you a great example really quick. So I would say four of my bridesmaids were probably four of my biggest rivals on the track. So two of them are Olympians in the 800. And one of them has retired already, but she ran the 800 for Jamaica. And one of them runs the 8 and the 15. So I run against these girls and try to beat them weekly up until, you know, the Olympic trials. And we see each other, say our hellos, but on the track, they're not my friend. They're not my best friend anymore. It's like on the track, they're lane six, and I need to beat everyone in that race. And I hope they do well. I hope everyone in the race stays healthy. But at the end of the day, I have to do what I need to do to make my goals come true, right? So, yeah. And then once we're done, then we grab dinner.
How do you separate the two?
Yeah. I separate them by, this is business. I will always love you forever, but this is business. And there's been races where, like, I have bumped them or they bumped me and I've had to put my elbow out, or they've had to like go around me or I've had to go around them. There's been some contact with some of my best friends. And then, you know, it's part of the business transaction. Our business transactions happen with ourselves and the clock. Everything else you can't control. So there's a little bumping. It's part of the game. If there's, you know, a fall, hopefully there's not. But that's also part of the game. It can be unexpected. So I separate them. And then obviously when the race is over and, you know, we've had our time to like let that competition and aggression and all of that kind of die down, then it's like, oh, do you want to grab some dinner? Yeah, what do you want? Pasta? Yeah. Or, you know, like, yeah. I still love you. I'm going to call you when I get home. I'll text you when I make it, when I land. So, yeah, and I love that. I really do love that because that speaks to our maturity. And I would say not many athletes can do that. And that's totally fine. Like, no judgment. You know what I mean? If you can't operate like that, totally get it. And I feel like, honestly, a lot of males can't because, I don't know, they have this thing called an ego. but I really love that because it just makes our job so much better. It really does. And when you've been doing this for as long as I have, it's like, man, you are going to have a bad race. I promise you, you will. You'll have a few, actually. And you might have some good races, and that's great. But at the end of the day, what happens in between, like my race is 2 minutes or shorter. There is a lot that goes on in between that time. So instead of being bitter, a little mean, or like confrontational, why can't you just enjoy the ride? So I have found some of my best friends on the track, both in college where we suffered together as collegiate teammates, and also in the professional realm. I love these girls. They're like my sisters. If I'm having a really bad race, they'll hold me when I cry. And if they have a bad race, I'll hold them when they cry. And we'll go grab a drink after.
I love that. But, you know, I worry more about being so friendly with my competitors that I can't then turn on like my competitiveness. Mm. And as you said, you know, like it's now business. So like, yes, maybe I don't have that switch.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people don't. Like I know athletes who I've trained with who don't. Like they literally can't be my friend. And I don't take it personally. Like I'm just like, it's better for you that we don't grab dinner. It's actually better for you that you just have your own friends that maybe don't run. And that's fine. I think it's to each its own. Definitely everyone has, you know, what they need to do to be competitive. And for me, I don't know, it's weird. I feel like for track and field, the sacrifice to be a professional at our level is immense. And I don't mean that like lightly. Most people don't understand. First of all, most people don't know how to go pro in track. So there's that. But they don't know what it takes to be an Olympian or to make a world championship team or to just, you know, have a long outdoor season or indoor season in track and field as a pro. Like the concept of that is not televised. It's not in the media. It's not really online unless you know, following a few track athletes on TikTok or Instagram. But other than that, it's not, people don't understand. So that part of it, I used to be like that. So I used to be like that in college where I wanted to fight every girl I was running with because I thought it made me better. And so when I ran from anger or when I ran from like, I don't like this girl, I'm not gonna let her beat me, it wasn't the same type of response that I was getting from my body. So when you run, you need everything to be relaxed, like, but obviously fast, but relaxed. So fast and relaxed. So when I'm thinking about my competition, I'm not thinking like, oh, I don't like this girl or blah, 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 all these things that rush my head. I am literally thinking about, what is my head doing? What are my shoulders doing? Am I relaxed? Am I breathing? Get ready to go. Get ready to go. Okay, the kick is coming. Somebody moved. Okay, focus. Go out, go out, go out. And sprint towards the end. Sprint towards the end. Sprint. Get to the line. Get to the line. At no time did I think about anybody else but myself. And so that's what I've changed my mindset to. I have now changed it to, what am I doing? Am I doing something wrong? Am I doing something right? This girl could go out and sprint the first lap and then die the second lap. Am I going to follow her? Absolutely not, because my coach would smack me and be like, we did not practice that. That's not our race plan. Why are you running her race plan, right? So yeah, track and field is so interesting in that you truly have to worry about yourself. And the more you worry about somebody else, the more you compare, the quicker that you will leave the sport, the quicker that you'll fail. So yeah, it's really easy. Like, honestly, most of the time, me and my friends on the track, we're thinking about ourselves. And it's not like a selfish thing. It's just a reality of our job. We have to make sure that we're doing what we know our strength is. For example, I have a best friend who likes to run from the back. I like to run in the front. And so she would never follow me, and I would never follow her, right? So it's about your training, your race plan, your execution. And that's where we thrive.
I think that's a big shift in athletics, or maybe it's female athletics. You know, just this idea of running for yourself, running happy. And mm-hmm. I say this across a lot of sports, you know, like in cycling, it's certainly that way too. You know, like yeah. There's a saying in cycling right now, like happy legs make fast legs.
Yeah.
And I think that's different. I mean, in my day, there was a lot more of what you were talking about in terms of like hating your competitor and, you know, being angry, and the angry yes. was going to make you fast.
Yeah. And it's weird. I don't even know where that comes from. I seriously learned that as a young athlete.
I think it's so old school.
It is super old school. And I think a lot of the older coaches just thought this is the right way.
Oh, yeah.
My college coach would tell us we couldn't talk to the other team. Literally would say, if I catch you talking to somebody, like, you're in trouble. I'm like, oh, well, I know her. You know, that's weird. Oh, but the competitiveness is real. I mean, especially in the NCAA, like, teams are like fighting for championships, and, you know, recruiting is a thing, and it's like, the who wants to go to the best university now? So I get it, that there was definitely a culture of that for sure, but definitely I think it's gotten better over time.
You seem like you have, I don't know, a wise person perspective on, like, looking back at your career. I mean, not that it's over, but you are in your last season. Do you feel like sort of the wise woman of the field?
That's funny. Yeah, I guess so. I'll take it. I will take it. A little bit. You know, I'm really big on education. My mother's been a teacher for 30 years. So I do have my master's. And after Texas, I wanted more education. So I got my master's in sports management in 2018. And since then, I've been itching. Like, I've always wanted to get my PhD. And honestly, what I've done is I've spent time developing, growing, learning, absorbing like a sponge in this sport since I've turned pro. And I'm not sure if I'll ever get my PhD. I might still, but I think I have my PhD in track and field. And that experience is just, it's amazing. And I will take it. I feel wise now. I'm like, okay. I'm a veteran now, I suppose. But yeah, as I enter my last season, I'm thinking, like, I do know a lot, and I have absorbed a lot. I've seen the best and the good and the bad and the ugly and everything in between. I've worked with a ton of coaches. I've trained with both of the American record holders in the 800 meters. I've been to some of the best training camps. I have worked with a lot of administrators. I have been a volunteer coach at the University of Texas, at Prairie View, Texas A&M, at Texas A&M. I have, you know, seen my span of cities overseas running and racing and being on the circuit. Last thing to do is make the Olympic team. So Yeah, I have done it all. I'm very proud of my career, but yeah, I think being a wise one is not a bad thing. I'm definitely happy to share my knowledge and to bring up the next generation and make it better for them.
That's cool. Before we go, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the TV show that you talked about at the beginning.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, sure. So I work part-time at the University of Texas at Austin, and one of the projects that I work on is called Blackademics Television, and I have been the show's producer for 6 seasons, and if you could imagine like a TED Talk, it's like that, a little bit more educational, and we highlight people of color. So not everyone that comes on the show is Black, but we typically tend to give Black people, Hispanic people, anyone of color, or anyone who's speaking about marginalized communities, opportunities to get on the stage and share their message and their life's work. A lot of them are professors. A ton of them are professors. And then we have a lot of community people. We have teachers. We have performers. And we actually are shown in about 32% of American households through PBS.
Oh, wow. So, that's great.
Yeah. So I've been working with PBS for a long time. And so, yeah, it's awesome to be able to work with UT and PBS and have an educational show that comes out. And it's been awesome to work with. We usually film it in Black History Month or during South by Southwest in Austin.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. Well, did I miss something that's important to you that you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot of it. I am obviously a little worried about our sport, and I think there has to be some major changes moving forward. So I'm really excited for the athletes, and I think obviously things like the NIL, things like, you know, just the more opportunities the USOPC gives USA Track and Field are all good. I think that there's a lot of hurdles coming up that we don't really think are coming. I'm a little nervous about the state of our sport, especially after Olympic year. Olympic year is always good, right? There's a lot of attention on our sport. So I am advocating for more support in between those 3 years. Where the athletes are still running, still under contract with their sponsors, still need races, still need money. So yeah, that's one of my passions again, is working for athletes and making it better for the next generation. So yeah, I think we covered it all.
Great. Well, thanks so much. It's great to have you. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much. Me too. And take care.
That's it for our show today. This was a real good one. I know I say that every time, but I sure do love talking to all of these incredible women. It's such a gift and an opportunity for us to learn a few things from them. Thank you, Kendra, for your generosity in our conversation. If you are interested in episodes with somewhat similar themes, I would suggest the runner Barb Broad, hammer throw superstar Janae Casnavoid, fencer Dagmara Wozniak, because she talks about winning well. And I'm going to throw in the two great NCAA basketball coaches, Muffet McGraw and Felicia Leggett-Jack. Find all of those episodes on your favorite podcast player or at hearhersports.com. Also on the website, find ways to reach me, sign up for the newsletter, browse through the link-filled show notes, and to support the podcast through Bookshop, Buy Me a Coffee, and our new affiliate, Naboso, who make wonderful insoles with little feet sensitizing nubs on them. It is wonderful that you are here listening. I so appreciate it. I appreciate your interest in female athletes and women's sports. I appreciate your time and your attention. Thank you for choosing Hear Her Sports podcast today. If you enjoyed the show or learned something, please be sure to tell your friends about us or review the show on your podcast player. I know you have heard it before, but spreading the word really does make a huge difference as we continue growing. Hear Her Sports is a proud member of Evergreen Podcasts. For more information or to check out other shows on the network, please visit evergreenpodcast.com. Thank you to Evergreen and to you for your ongoing support and for being part of the growth of women's sports. Until next time, bye-bye.
Okay, there goes a plane.
1 to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.